Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I don't think I told more than three people that I was even home. You know, I don't think I wasn't ready to tell people. I wasn't ready to tell people that I might be done. You know, I wasn't ready to even say that I was released.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm, an interview series talking to former professional baseball players to reminisce about their playing days and what they learned on their journey from amateur ball to the professional ranks. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. On today's episode, I am joined by Justin Seager, the 2013 Atlantic 10 Co-Player of the Year at UNC Charlotte, former 12th round pick of the Mariners as a first baseman, and brother of Kyle and Corey Seager. Justin is currently a product specialist for Blast Motion. He's working in baseball tech and working with pro ball players on how to fine-tune their swings before contact. On this episode, we get into a lot of how his career in baseball, specifically the off-season working in the cages with his brothers getting in the lab, has kind of led him into what he's doing now. We also get into his college career and how he turned a walk-on spot at Charlotte into a really successful college career. We go into the mentality that you need to bring into being a walk-on, and we get to talk about what Selection Sunday is like for a team that's in the tourney but not hosting. That Charlotte team, Kyle's freshman year, had won the A-10 tourney, got to sit on Selection Sunday, figure out which regional they were going to go to. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know how much I like hearing about college baseball stories. That was a treat for me personally. Hope you all enjoyed as well. Justin also gets into his time in minor league baseball. While his brothers play premium defensive positions, Justin was a right-handed hitting first baseman, and that's something that puts a lot of pressure on your bat. He gets into how that can affect your mindset on the box as you try to tap into what you need to do to make it to the big leagues. Of course, we also discuss growing up with two brothers who'd eventually be big leaguers, and he keys us in on the most competitive Seager and the biggest bully in the Seager household. It's a fun episode with Justin, really glad he could join. Episodes of Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you've been enjoying the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please rate, leave a 5-star rating and a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know any guests we should chase down. All that feedback is very much appreciated and does help the show. Also, make sure you subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. If I'm doing my math right, I think this is the last pod before minor league baseball season ends. BA has you covered on that, as well as the MLB playoffs, everything going on there. Ben Badler and Carlos Collazo also have future projection up and running again after a brief hiatus. Always, you know, one of my favorite listens every week. So go tune into that, and it is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. So with that, let's talk to Justin Seager on today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he was a 12th round pick of the Mariners in the 2013 draft out of Charlotte. It is Justin Seager. Justin, thanks so much for joining From Phenom to the Farm.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. I want to get into, tell me about Blast Baseball, what you're doing right now, because what you're doing now is going to factor into some of the stuff we talk about tonight.
So I'm the MLB product support specialist. So I deal with all the MLB clients that we have. We work with almost everybody in some capacity. So I'm kind of their point of contact. I help consult. I help train them. I help get them up and running. Any questions they have, any issues they have as well. Anything and everything Blast. So, you know, the sensor.
And for folks who might not be familiar, describe, what do you guys do at Blast?
Yeah, we are a data technology company. We make a sensor that goes on the end of the bat that measures a lot of very useful swing metrics. It's all pre-contact metrics. So it really tells you about the hitter and about the type of athlete and the movement patterns and, you know, how explosive, how quick, how fast twitch, how consistent they are. So it's very, very helpful information. A lot of teams really utilize it.
Awesome. Well, we will touch on that and your career as far as training goes and how that's developed you to where you are now. Let's go back to your upbringing. Talk about your family. Growing up in your family, was there any choice to be anything but a baseball player? I know you played some basketball in high school, but is it a requirement growing up in your family?
You know what? My parents were amazing. They absolutely let us do whatever we were passionate about. And, you know, I appreciate that from them. They definitely pushed the school first, which was also appreciated. But, yeah, we all kind of gravitated to baseball pretty quickly. You know, funny enough, a lot of us or all three of us played basketball. And, you know, for the most part, basketball was almost my favorite sport for a while. And, you know, I just kept coming back to baseball and I knew that was what I was really good at. And yeah, I mean, it started probably when I could walk. You know, I don't know if I could swing a bat before I could walk. I'm not sure. But, you know, we played in the backyard. We would we'd go at it. Me and Corey are a lot closer in age. So it was always like Kyle was the designated pitcher and it was always me versus Corey. So I don't know if that was part of the reason we became so competitive and probably pushed each other, but it was always me and Corey going at it, and Kyle was always kind of edging everybody on.
When did you decide that you wanted to make baseball your thing as far as playing at the next level or at least being mainly a baseball player in high school?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because I stopped playing baseball for about a year and a half because I just loved basketball. And, you know, I thought that I was a really good basketball player. And I like to think I was okay, but, just being away from baseball, it almost kind of hurt me. And I felt, like it was just kept calling me back. So, it almost was good for me in a sense too, because it kind of refueled the fire and you know, drove my passion to come back and keep working hard. And, you know, so that was about late middle school, early high school. So I was really kind of fired up to get back into it. And, you know, kind of ever since then, that's always been the passion.
And what are the pros and cons of having an older brother? Cause you said Kyle is significantly out of high school by the time you get into high school, already, you know, playing at North Carolina. What are kind of the pros and cons of having an older brother who sets a very high standard of what would be expected from both you and Corey as you get into high school baseball?
Well, just in case he listens, you know, I'm going to say there weren't any cons, but to be honest, no, there weren't many cons. There was a lot of positives. He was always a inspiration first, to be honest. And then he was, you know, almost another coach, another teacher, as well. He helped me tremendously. He gave me so much advice. I know he was, you know, very, very, very helpful in my growth as a player and in Corey's growth as a player. He gave us a lot of really useful information. I think a lot of it was more the mindset and the approach and, you know, how to focus, how to work hard, just keep working. And one of the best quotes that he actually gave me and Corey, and I know he, I think Corey's probably mentioned this before in an interview or so, but he told us that, you know, no matter what level you're at, treat every level like you're the big leagues. No matter if you're in high school, no matter if you're in JV or varsity, or no matter if you're in you know, rookie ball in the minors, treat every level like it's the big leagues. And, you know, that resonated a lot because it kind of keeps you in the moment, keeps you focused. You know, you work hard and you go about your work day to day, not too much, not looking forward too much, and really focusing and working. And, you know, and I think that helped me a lot. And, you know, I know it's helped Corey a lot too. So
when it came time to start thinking about college, thinking about the next level, how did you land on Charlotte? What was your recruitment like? What made the difference as far as making that your school choice?
Also a very interesting question. So, I was very different in the recruiting process than my brothers. We actually, all three of us, had very different paths. Corey was always Corey, and Corey was always bigger, better, just really good all the time. And then, you know, Kyle, not saying that Kyle wasn't or I wasn't, but Kyle was a lot more recruited out of high school. He was recruited by the MLB too, and for the draft out of high school, decided to go to school, just loves Chapel Hill, and was, you know, was very bought in on the Tar Heels. Mine was a very different story. First off, I was a peanut when I was a freshman, sophomore in high school. I was about 5'3", maybe 100 pounds, even into my sophomore year. So that was tough to get a lot of eyes on me and to get noticed.
You and I were around the same size.
Yeah.
And I have your player profile up from Pro Bowl. We are no longer the same size.
Yeah, no, it was pretty interesting because, I grew about 9 inches after my sophomore summer. So in my sophomore summer into my junior year, I grew 9 inches all that summer, which was kind of a whirlwind, obviously. And then, you know, I unfortunately got hurt my junior year. I actually broke the L5 vertebrae. I cracked it on both sides of the spinal cord, and I missed a whole year. I really was only allowed to swing a bat the 2 days before our first game my senior year. I was allowed to play basketball. So I got hurt in basketball season my junior year. Finished the season, didn't realize that I had a broken back. I thought it was muscular, and so I kind of kept playing through it, and I would sit out of practices a lot and just play in the games. And fortunately my coach was accepting of that. And then I played in, I think, 3 games, baseball games, my junior year, where I was just unbearable. I couldn't swing. I was just in so much pain. The rotation was what really hurt. And so it kind of crushed me because I had, you know, rekindled my flame for baseball. I finally grew. I knew like people were going to hopefully start looking at me and be interested in me. And
back when we were in high school, that junior year summer was the summer. Now it's like 7th grade spring is when the colleges come started talking to kids. But
exactly.
Back then it was that summer was the big summer.
Exactly. So I was really excited. And I, you know, unfortunately the problem was that I was finally had grown, and I was trying to put on some weight and some size and, you know, be a little more of a prospect and be interesting in the eyes of scouts. And so I unfortunately got hurt and came back like 2 days before my senior year, was cleared to start swinging again. I hadn't swung a bat since I got hurt. And, you know, it was pretty humbling pretty quickly because I couldn't get a ball out of the infield. I just had no strength, and I had to wear a brace all day, 24/7 around my waist. So like, I just had no core left, and hadn't swung a bat in a year. And it was a grind, but but luckily I was able to kind of get back to somewhat of the type of player I was. I didn't necessarily have the strength that I had. And then kind of had to recruit myself. So I got lucky enough to reach out to some coaches, and I played for a, you know, pretty good summer team, and was on the roster before I got hurt, and then was still able to play a little bit. But so that allowed me to kind of recruit myself a little bit, and got lucky enough to have, you know, very few offers at the end, but I still got a couple. And Charlotte offered me a walk-on spot, and I just loved the campus and I loved the program, and I just really wanted to be there, and I knew it was a good baseball program, and I had a chance to go to the next level. And So like I went in as a walk-on, had to earn my spot. Fortunately was able to play a lot my freshman year, did well, earned my spot, earned a scholarship, and then, you know, kind of the rest was history. So
Well, when you step into college, step in as a walk-on, everyone takes to that first fall differently. There's different adjustments for everyone, whether you're a walk-on or whether you're the top scholarship guy in the class. What was the biggest adjustment for you, and how were you able to go from a walk-on to a guy who, you played in exactly half your team's games, which for a freshman year walk-on is huge, very unlikely.
Yeah, you know, I believed in myself, you know, and I think that's kind of first and foremost. I believed in myself. I knew I was a good ball player and I wanted to prove it. You know, I knew that not a lot of people had the opportunity to scout me, and I wanted to show that, you know, maybe some people missed out, or maybe, you know, like, not that I was only lucky to be at Charlotte, but, you know, Charlotte was fortunate to have me as well. So I worked my tail off. I knew I was behind the eight ball a little bit, and I still was able to put on some weight and some strength my freshman year. You know, I accepted that they might want me to move around a little bit, and I started learning first base. I was a shortstop in high school too. You know, all three of us went up in high school as shortstops, and, you know, I wasn't, I guess, the flightest of feet. So they knew I was going to end up probably on the corners, and I did finally grow and put some weight on. So I guess that was eventual, but, so I learned first base and, you know, was fortunate enough to get some playing time and you know, had some success and kind of had to grind my way. But, you know, I knew that's kind of what I wanted to do. Not that I would have settled going anywhere else. That's by no means the case, but I wanted to push myself at a better program and give myself the best opportunity.
So that freshman year, you guys are a 40-win team. You win the A-10 tournament, if I have that right. And so when it comes time for Selection Sunday, you're in. You guys, you're going somewhere. What's Selection Sunday like when you're in, but you're not a host? You know, you're just waiting to find out, like, where's the flight?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting no matter what, right? Like, you know, you're going to a regional, and, you know, that's what you're most stoked about. And you see the projections, and, you know, you're thinking, what if we go here and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And to get thrown out to Arizona State was pretty wild. You know, like, after we heard where we were announced, we were excited to go out there and check it out, and, you know, knew it was an amazing program. And, you know, they were saying how stacked that regional was. So we were, you know, excited and nervous all at the same time. And, that was an amazing experience. I, unfortunately fell short my junior year, but, would have loved to have gone back and maybe see how far we could have gotten.
Well, as you head into your sophomore year, you're on scholarship. You've been a guy at Charlotte. You're coming back. You're expecting playing time. But at that point, you officially have two, even to the casual baseball fan, have two notable brothers, because Kyle's now in the big leagues. Corey has been a first round pick. When it came to the in-game stuff, did you feel any of that noise around you? Did you feel like you know, you got team's best shot because of that? Like, I remember when I was in college, we had a Tuesday game against a school that had Mark Grudzlanik's nephew on it. And even like that, I mean, the name Grudzlanik, like, you know, the guy's got to be related to Mark Grudzlanik, but it's like, man, I got to get that guy out. So did you feel any of that noise, feel like you got a little more undue attention than other guys because of that, or any pressure?
I mean, it's there, to be honest. You know, it's always there. But, you know, I felt honored. Right. And, you know, this isn't just, you know, my answer to you and like a podcast or an interview type question, but, this is the truth is that, you know, if I could be mentioned with my brothers, with Kyle and Corey, you know, to me, that's really good company. So if I'm in that conversation, then I must be doing something right as well. So I always appreciated it. And I was definitely there, definitely in the back of my mind, but, you know, to me, it was an honor.
So that sophomore year, it's a tougher year for you on the field than your freshman year. It's a tougher year for the team, especially coming off that 40-win season, trip to regionals. How does that play out in the clubhouse? Does it chalk up to maybe talent, maybe a younger team, or their main things that freshman year team had maybe mentally or just, you know, in general that the 2012 team might not have had? Like, where does that difference come in a college lineup?
It's a great question. You know, we did have some upperclassmen, even fifth year guys, I think, my freshman year. So it could have been part of it, you know, absolutely. You know, I tried to, put a little too much pressure on myself, and that was part of the, you know, the issues that I had. I was in and out of the lineup and up and down in the lineup, and, you know, the mental side of it got to me a little bit. And you know what, to be honest, again, talking to my brothers really helped me. I kind of took the approach of after that year, you know, I still had some productivity, and, you know, I didn't necessarily have the greatest average and, you know, that sort of thing. But, so I took the approach of, you know what, like, I'm not going to let it affect me. I'm going to focus on, you know, making sure I get back in the lineup. And I told the coaches in our meeting after that year, because I was lucky enough to go up to the Northwoods League in Green Bay that summer, and I had a really good year, a really good summer. But I told them before I left that, you know, they asked, you know, how I thought of myself and what I thought moving forward, you know, kind of the end of the year conversations. And we talked about how they thought, you know, I might be back in that like 5th, 6th, 7th slot and still playing most of the day or most of the games, but, you know, maybe in the DH first base role, kind of moving around again. And I said, you know, with all due respect, you know, I think I'm the best hitter in our locker room. I think by far I'm the best hitter. I'm going to be in the 3-hole and I'm going to lead the team in every offensive category. And again, that's not to toot my own horn, but, you know, fortunately enough, I went out there and I figured some things out that summer. I had a really good summer in Northwoods and got a lot of attention that summer, which helped tremendously. And I came back my junior year and, you know, I won player of the year for the conference. So
I want to talk about that summer, though, because I haven't on this podcast, haven't had a lot of chances to talk about the Northwoods League. I've heard great things, and a lot of guys equate the Northwoods League to kind of a minor league baseball schedule. You're playing a ton of games. I know when we would send guys up there in school, a lot of times that you make it to the end of the playoffs, you're getting to school late. Like, you're missing the first, you know, the first week of school. What was there something specific in that summer that you were able to build on and pull into that junior year? Or was it just, you know, a lot of ABs, things click, or did you take something into that? Did you take to that schedule? Because the difference with that is you're playing kind of like minor league baseball. You're playing baseball almost every day.
No, you're absolutely right. It was exactly like minor league baseball. It got me prepped and ready for that, which was nice, but I didn't necessarily know that at the time. You know, my brothers and I are really good. We like to think of ourselves as studiers of the game, and we like to think of ourselves as you know, trying to always find ways to improve. And, you know, we take that to heart in our work, and we take that to heart in our day-to-day work as well. So what I did was I tried to make some adjustments, you know, I guess maybe definitely like consistent ABs helped me, probably just a different scenery, talking to some different coaches, getting different perspectives from players, you know, that's always good. And it helps you become more well-rounded, put, you know, different ideas together. And I utilized that. I utilized a lot of things my brothers were learning in pro ball. And they, you know, that helped me a lot. And those consistent at-bats, I was able to really kind of put together a good summer. But it's a grind. The Northwoods is a grind. It gets you ready for the minor leagues. It's the real deal. And I had a great time. I mean, I loved my host family. I loved Green Bay. You know, I had an absolute great time. I now call myself a little bit of a Packers fan just because I was up there and experienced it all, and they're serious about their Packers, man. So it was an awesome summer.
I have never heard a bad word about the Northwoods League, but like you said, you roll into that junior year and it seems like pretty much right off the bat, things start going really well for you. How long into a season? Because college baseball is strange. It goes so fast. You have your preseason, then suddenly you're in conference play, and by you're in April before you know it. How long into the season? Because you had that freshman year where you're playing half the games, you're in and out, same kind of thing. Sophomore year, a little more struggle there. How long into the season until you know, like, not only am I a mainstay, I'm that guy I told the coaches I was going to be in the meeting, but like, I'm having an awesome year. Like, I could, if I keep this rolling, things are going to look good for me.
Yeah, man. You know, I think believing in myself was big. You know, my teammates believed in me. I think they, I had a really good team, and I had a lot of friends that I'm still really close with on that team. And, you know, I think them kind of believing in me helped me as well. You know, like they trusted in me, they believed in me. That gave me a little more self-confidence. Believed in myself a lot more than I had in previous years. I knew I could do it, and I'd proved it that summer against really good competition in the Northwoods. And, you know, and I just, you know, I told myself kind of like, I'm going to come back and I'm going to be the best hitter on the team. So I took that to heart, and I think guys kind of rallied around me, knowing that, you know, it wasn't just words, I was putting it into action. And I think I just had a good group of guys around me, and they helped me kind of stay on track. And we were just having fun, man. I was locked in. I was having a really good year, but I was enjoying being with my friends, and we were grinding together, and we were out there having fun, and we were winning games, and it was exciting.
How happy are you that you never have to swing those dead bats against those high seam balls again? The ultimate dead ball college baseball era.
Man, I was there at that worst time possible.
I was a pitcher in that era. So, and I already wasn't very good. I needed those dead balls, but it was pretty much like Chris Bryant was the only one who could hit dingers in that era.
Well, I guess it was almost good because I had a boatload of doubles, but I guess, you know, it would have been nice if some of those were homers, and that would have helped a little bit. But
walk me through draft day of that year, because by then you guys' season was over at that point. You had lost in the A-10 tournament, so you're just kind of sitting around waiting.
That was tough. Yeah, we were actually hosting the tournament that year too, and we had a really good team, and you know, to be honest, we probably had the best team in the league, and you know, we gave it up in the championship. We came through the winner's bracket. The team beat us to come through the loser's bracket. They had to beat us twice on Sunday to win it, and they did. You know, like, you know, unfortunately, we couldn't seal the deal, but we had a really good team, and so that was a hard pill to swallow. But draft day is just something else. It's just it's hard to explain. I mean, I was talking to my advisor at the time, and you know, we had conversations and was seeing like, you know, where I might go. There were a few conversations around maybe bumping up and, you know, utilizing kind of the allotted money for the first 10 rounds. That was kind of the thing around my draft as well. So there was a couple conversations on the first, second day too. So it was kind of a whirlwind couple of days because I didn't know when I would go. I had an idea of when I would kind of go, but like I said, there was conversations, you might jump up and we might, you know, get you real early to utilize some cap space and things like that. So it was crazy. But, you know, once I got the call, that's just, it can't explain that feeling. It was just unbelievable, just pure joy. I was so excited, you know, like I'd worked so long for that. I had a lot of ups, but a lot of downs too, with the injury, with the tough sophomore year, you know, just different things. And, you know, to see your work come to fruition and you get that opportunity, it was special. I mean, I don't know how else to say it.
So you had another year of eligibility, and unlike a lot of guys, you had probably as good an insight as to what minor league baseball is like as anyone. You had two guys you could ask about what that lifestyle is like. What for you was the reason that you decided to forego that year? You probably got paid more than you would have as a senior, just because no one gives seniors money pretty much. But what about, you know, what convinced you to forego that last year at Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. You know, you don't have a whole lot of negotiation power once you go back to your senior year. That was definitely part of it. And I got a really good opportunity with Seattle, and my advisor did a great job. But, you know, at the same time, I also did have a ton of insight on the minor leagues and on the professional side. So I knew that if you're a 3-year college guy and you have experience and you're successful, you get some opportunities because they know you've kind of proven yourself. When you're a high school guy like my brother, I knew that they're going to slowly ramp you up, even though you might be the guy that they want and you might be the guy of the future. You know, it's a little bit slower process. So I knew if I waited another year, I was a year older, that only kind of hurts you. You know, the money side was a little bit of a factor, but I knew if I got in there and I was successful, I had a really good opportunity to you know, progress throughout the minors and hopefully get a shot.
So you sign early enough that you're able to pretty much get right into it. You go right to short season, you get in 61 games. That's a long year of college starting in like February, March-ish, all the way down to, you know, 61 games of Pro Bowl. How did your body hold? Is there any way to prepare for that first glimpse at minor league baseball? I mean, you'd had the Northwoods the year before, so kind of similar thing there, but how did your body feel after that first summer of Pro Bowl?
Yeah, you know, that was definitely a big shock. You know, the training staff in the minors and professional baseball is really good. You know, a lot of the times they want to make sure you're on the safe side and make sure you're good to go and you're ready to play every day and, you know, not necessarily try to push you too much. And then they know it's your first year, so they're a little more on the safe side, right? What I did learn was that I wanted to be a lot more prepared for my body to last for a full season. So when I went back to the off season and went into next year, that I knew that I needed to be prepared, and I knew that I wanted to do things a little bit different throughout the year. So I definitely faded a little bit physically that first year, because it's a lot of games. You're absolutely not used to it. You really don't know the grind until you get into it. It's, you know, it's easy to talk about and tell stories and kind of go into it, but it's a whole lot different when you're actually there and you're on bus trips, you know, all through the night. You're sleeping in a, you know, you're sleeping on the floor of a bus, or you're sleeping in a one seater sharing a bus seat with a guy, and you're trying to get some sleep, and you get in at, you know, 9:10 in the morning at the next facility, and you got to be at the field at 4 or 5 to play again. So like all those things, man, they start to wear on you. It's not just the games. It's everything in between. And, you know, guys don't show up at 7 o'clock for the games. You know, you're there at like 1, 2 in the afternoon, and you're there till midnight or even later. So
I'm a big food guy, so I'm always interested to hear how guys adapt to the food aspect of the minor leagues, because in college, you know, you got those nice dining halls. I've been to Charlotte. Charlotte's a wonderful city, a lot of good options. What is life like up in Everett and, you know, in Bakersfield and Clinton, and like how, you know, minor leagues are not noted for being a foodie's paradise?
That's exactly right, man. I've got some horror stories on some food experiences. I absolutely loved my time in Everett. I mean, I couldn't have had a better summer. The team that I played with, the guys that I met, I'm still friends with probably 75% of that team. It was just an amazing experience. But there was days where, you know, you would get the only thing on the spread is PB&Js, and I love PB&Js, but I don't know if I've had millions of PB&Js now through the minor leagues, where you have to just take a gallon of water, take a bite, and just chug as much water just to wash that thing down, because you feel like it's just chalk, that you've had the same thing for the last, you know, 97 meals, and you're just choking them down. But even had experiences where we had the slices of ham counted, because even though it was ham and you got the specialty of the month where you got ham sandwiches instead of PB&Js, the ham slices were counted for you, that you couldn't exceed a certain amount, and that was all you got. So it's a culture shock, that's for sure.
So what were your off seasons like? Especially, so your first year is 2013, you go into that off season. Tech was starting to come into baseball, you know, this kind of new age of development, but that's like 6 iPhones ago. What was your training? I'd imagine you had some good off-season training partners, but as far as how you went about your development, you know, working on your swing and stuff, what were the off seasons like early in your pro ball career?
Yeah, off seasons were a great time, because I got to spend a lot of time with my brothers, and we really went into the lab and we really dove into our work, and we really tried to figure out, all right, we need to clean some things up. We learned a lot from each other. The really nice part was, you know, there's 3 of us, and you know, one could flip, one could hit, and one could watch, and we could take video of each other. We could really focus in on mechanics. We could watch each other's cues, and we really got in nitty gritty. So, I mean, the off seasons were huge. You know, I had a few opportunities to go play in some different leagues in the winter. And, you know, to me, like, it could have been helpful and it could have been really beneficial, but that experience getting into the lab with my brothers and stuff was to me just outweighed everything. And I felt really, really good after off seasons. Sometimes it was hard for me to maintain some of the adjustments throughout the year, but, you know, I think, unfortunately for me, it clicked a little late, kind of, you know, maybe after my window was up a little bit. You know, that kind of happens, right? But I think, you know, the chances of us getting together, or the ability of us to get together and work together, was extremely beneficial for me. And the nice part was we had our own, you know, BP thrower every year. And, you know, our dad threw BP to all three of us every year. So that was nice, having your own personalized BP thrower. And, you know, and again, when it's your father, you guys, it's a special moment when the three boys and their dad get to hang out, and you're, you know, all three professional baseball players working on your craft and spending family time. So it was really nice. And at the same time, it was really beneficial for me too.
You talk about working on the swing. You went into pro ball as a right-handed first baseman, which puts a ton of pressure on your bat, the ability to produce. Your brother, especially Corey plays a premium position. Kyle, you know, great third baseman. With that extra pressure on you as a right-handed hitter, how were you shaping yourself? Like, what were you, I mean, 'cause you know as well as anyone what it takes to get to the big leagues. What was your kind of plan for, okay, this is how I'm going to, you know, get to that production level?
Man, I love it. You're hitting all the good questions, man. This is good stuff.
Been doing this for a while. Yeah.
That's right. It shows. No, that's exactly right. You know, I was, I came up as a middle infielder, started learning first base. I even had to play left field my junior year because we had so many injuries and moved around a little bit. But as long as I was in the lineup hitting third, I didn't really care where I was playing. But, yeah, that's exactly what happened. You know, I tried to, you know, part of me was making some adjustments, and I was trying to make sure that I was producing runs, because I knew that's, especially as a right-handed first baseman, that's what gets you to the big leagues. So I had power in me, and I tried to get every ounce of power out of me. You know, and sometimes I might have gone a little too far early on in my career, and that hurt me. You know, I had a slow, year in Clinton, and then, you know, it hurt me a little bit in Bakersfield my first year. And I kind of figured some things out after that year. And even though I wasn't the everyday starter after that, I was the platoon, kind of a platoon guy, first and third, DH. I was still getting some at-bats, not as much as I would have liked, but I was in the lineup a decent amount still. And I was able to produce, and the power kind of came. And, you know, it was a little more natural instead of forced. And, you know, unfortunately, you kind of only sometimes learn that by trial by fire. But, you know, I was able to get there. And that's kind of what I mean, where maybe it was a little too late. But at the same time, you know, I really got to a good place and I felt really good. So, you know, we were always kind of trying to critique and tink and work on things. And, you know, you're absolutely right. I tried to make sure I got as much power out of me as I could.
I want to talk about Clinton, because Clinton in past episodes of this podcast has been brought up a few times of guys who have run through there, the smell in Clinton, the dog food. So I went to school in West Texas. I went to school in Odessa, which is oil country. It smells like sulfur. So you get about 45 minutes out and you can start whiffing it. You know, you were in the Texas League for a little bit. You might have run through Midland, smelled that.
Yep.
After a couple days, like after a couple, you know, week or so, after, you know, you're back on campus for a week, you don't notice it anymore. You don't notice it until you leave. Is that what life is like in Clinton, or is that just hanging on you?
I wish, man. It is not the case. Especially on days the wind was blowing in the opposite direction, man, that would come across the field and you could almost see it. The wave go across the whole stands and everybody all got a whiff at the same time. That was interesting. Clinton's a special place. That's for sure.
We got another thing about Clinton. So I emailed you about this before we recorded, but You need to walk me through. How much do you remember about the game from May 7th, 2014?
It was a good day. That was a really good day. I remember that pretty well, actually.
So when you're a team and when you go down 17-1, and minor league baseball is more about development than winning. So that's not a conference game or anything. On like that's not like a Saturday night where you're trying to win in conference. 17-1. How is it not like, let's let the pitchers hit? Like, I'm going to try to hit left-handed today, see what happens. Walk me through that process of how this game ended up 20-17.
Yeah, man, you got 140 games in the minor leagues. And when you're in Clinton, those 140 games drag out to feel like about maybe 340 games, right? So, you know, if you probably asked me any other day besides that day, if you would have been checked out, we would have been like, all right, let's go back to the hotel. I'm going to go get some sleep. Like, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, hopefully we got a better matchup tomorrow and we'll see what happens. But oddly enough, that day in the dugout, you know, maybe the bullpen was a little different. They kind of got beat up a little bit early on, unfortunately. But in the dugout, the hitters, there was kind of a feeling, you know, and I know this kind of sounds crazy, but there was kind of a feeling like, man, we're swinging it pretty good. Like, we feel good. We had guys on base the first couple innings, even though I think we only had one run through three or four, maybe. We felt good and we were putting up good ABs. We had guys on base and, you know, we kind of were just like, you know what, you know, this game's kind of out. I'm going to get my good at bats in and I'm going to, you know, try to get a couple knocks for myself and go back to the hotel, at least somewhat happy. And, you know, it kind of kept snowballing. You know, everybody was like, man, like, we just scored another four runs, or we scored another six runs, or, you know, whatever. Like, yeah, let's keep doing it, see what happens. And then, you know, you get to the late innings, and I think we hit a grand slam in the ninth to tie it up, to send it to extras. And, you know, just like once that happened, we're like, man, this is destined. Like, we're not losing this game. And it was pretty wild. It kind of felt like that from the beginning, oddly enough.
Yeah, that is for the folks keeping score at home, that is a 16-run comeback. You guys end up winning 20-17. If that was a getaway day, do you think that game ends probably 17-1?
that's very accurate, probably, yes.
So you have that season in Clinton, then you move up to Bakersfield, and like you said, that first year kind of a struggle. Definitely probably not not what you want. Cal League leads to a long hot summer. There's likely no shortage of tips on how to get. I'm sure you've got your brothers, you've got hitting coach, you know, on the team, you've got other guys. How do you, like, when things aren't clicking at the plate, what is the day to day like? Like, what's the mentality in the cage? What's the strategy in the box? Were you a guy who was always kind of tinkering, you know, saying, hey, I'm going to make this adjustment, we're going to see what this does, and looking for something? Or was it just like, I'm trying to stay with what I've got and hopefully things start falling my way? Kind of how do you go about that especially when there's a lot of pressure on you to produce? You know, how do you mentally take that in?
Yeah, I think we already touched on two points about it. You know, like, especially when you go to the Cal League, everybody says how, you know, how well the ball flies and, you know, you're going to hit 40 homers and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's weighted homers though, so it doesn't really count. So you're like expecting, I'm going to just go out and hit all these homers. And again, as a right-handed first baseman, I know I got to drive the ball in, I got to drive in runs, and I know I got to hit some homers. So that was part of it. You know, I tried to do too much. And I tried to get out of myself a little bit, and it didn't work for me. So, you know, and then the other side, like you said, is all three of us, but I would say my older brother and myself, we're definitely like very – we liked to tinker quite a bit. And, you know, the joke of me and Corey would tell Kyle is, you know, every off season he'd look really good. And then by, you know, a week or 2 weeks into the season, he's got a different swing. And then the next 2 weeks he's got a different swing, but it works for him. But, but I would do the same thing. You know, I would tinker and I would try to figure it out. I would try to get that feeling that I had in the off season when I felt really good with my brothers. And sometimes it was hard for me to get back to that, and I couldn't find it. And, you know, after that year, You know, for whatever reason, something finally clicked and I started getting the feeling, and I could reproduce it myself without necessarily having them to be there to see what was going on. And, you know, that was really, really big for me because, you know, I started to lose a little confidence again. And I was like, man, like, am I just doing too much? Am I outmatched? What am I doing? You know, like, I feel like I still belong, but what's going on? And, when you can trust your swing and you can trust the, you know, the mechanics, and when you feel really comfortable, that's a game changer when you step in the box. Cause especially if you don't have to think about those things and you just go in there and you're locked in on the pitcher, you're locked in on the ball, you're looking at pitches, you're looking at the sequences, you're looking at the situation. That's a very, very good feeling. And that's a very freeing feeling when you don't have to think, man, I need to make sure I get, you know, my elbow in slot. I need to make sure my hip fires first, or I need to make sure, you know, whatever the case is, any and all of the mechanical things you could think of, if that's the things that's going through your head and you're in the box and you're already in trouble, right? So unfortunately, the first year in Bakersfield, that was the case. My second year in Bakersfield, I felt really comfortable and, you know, I made some really good adjustments and I could start to feel it myself and I could repeat it. And I knew if I was getting away from it or anyone, I wasn't. And I think I had 14 homers that year. So if I had a full season, I'd be about 30 homers in, you know, somewhere around there, maybe, somewhere around 100 or more RBIs projected to do like a full season of at bats. And, you know, I felt like I was really producing. I felt like I was figuring it out. I was coming into my own, and even my outs were hard outs or productive outs. And I felt like I was putting together good at bats, and I was finally feeling like I was progressing and ready to move on. And I think I got behind the eight ball a little bit, and you know, just how baseball works, I was lucky enough to get promoted, and I was really excited to go to double A that year. And I was really excited to prove myself because I thought I'd finally kind of clicked and figured it out. But we had the new regime come in, the new ownership. That was part of the problem. They signed a bunch of fringe guys that kind of clogged up the minor leagues a little bit. So I unfortunately wasn't getting a ton of at-bats when I got to double A. When I did get in there, I felt good. I was hitting the ball well, hitting the ball hard. You know, maybe not always getting hits, but I was lining out. I was hitting good at-bats. I think I was up to like maybe the 270, 280 range before before my last game, where I think I went like 0-for-5 with a couple lineouts, where I still felt really good. And I kind of dropped my average pretty quickly when you only have like 30 at bats. but I felt really good. And, you know, like, again, just the timing and opportunities had kind of run out, and, you know, it was just a combination of things. But,
Well, the Mariners release you July of 2017. What are the logistics of a midseason release for a minor leaguer? Were you locked into a lease or something? Like, what is that's, you know, when they cut you loose, what's the fallout for you on the player side?
Yeah, you know what? The Mariners treated me extremely well. I was very appreciative of how they handled it. They practically gave me the option. You know, they pretty much told me like, hey, we love the type of person you are. We love the work ethic you have. We love the knowledge you have. We love, you know, how, what you kind of bring to the table and what you bring to the team and organization. And they essentially offered me a job if I felt like I was done playing baseball. And at the time I felt really good about the adjustments that I had, and I thought, you know, like, I think I've kind of figured it out, and if I just get an opportunity that I think I have, I think I still have a chance to make it. So all that kind of hit me at once, and you know, I decided to ask for my release instead of them actually just saying, hey, pack your bags and go home. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to almost have an option, and I still wanted to play because I think I still had a chance. And the problem with that is, like you said, middle of the year, it is extremely difficult to get picked up by a team, especially when you're in double A and, you know, you're not going to necessarily go down when you're 25, 25, I think I was. You're not going to necessarily go down to like a ball at 25. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to sign middle of the year, find a corner infielder the middle of the year at double A, right? So it's very hard to find that perfect fit. And I almost signed with a team or two. But I said, you know what, I'm going to go back. I'm going to start. I still had school left, like you said. So I'm going to start a semester. I'm going to keep training. I'm going to get ready. I'm going to get picked up in the off season and give it another shot. So that kind of led me into Blast, and it kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, part of me was kind of struggling with the whole lifestyle and, you know, not getting the opportunities. And, you know, unfortunately that last year in Double A, I had, I think, 40 at bats at All-Star break. And, you know, I kind of was just, unfortunately, kind of just there watching the games. I had great seats. I was in the dugout watching every game, but
best seats in the stadium.
Yeah. But I felt like I was kind of just sitting there and kind of wasting away. So that was hard, but, you know, like that kind of gave me that kind of lost a little bit of the love and passion of the game, unfortunately. And, you know, that was part of my reason, part of my decision to kind of hang them up and say, you know what, I think I'm okay. And I'm going to move on and happy with what I accomplished and, kind of see what life brings me next.
How long after your release did it take you to make that decision to say, I'm done, I'm moving into the next thing?
Oh, it took me a while, man. I don't think I told more than three people that I was even home. You know, I don't think I wasn't ready to tell people. I wasn't ready to tell people that I might be done. You know, I wasn't ready to even say that I was released, you know, even though luckily I kind of had the option and I kind of asked for it. That's tough. You know, I don't know if that's ego or what that is, but there's, you know, there's something to being a, you know, a baseball player for so long, and that's your passion and that's your dream. And knowing you are at a really high level and knowing, you know, that you did what you did, it's hard to kind of just move on and accept it and give it up and, you know, whatever the case is. So it took me a little while.
What were the conversations with your brothers like about if you should keep it up, about retirement, what you should do next? Because at that time, Kyle's gotten a big contract. He's going to be playing for a while. Corey, you know, probably, you know, at that point, sky's the limit. What did you come to them with, and what were those conversations like? Because I'd be surprised if you made that decision without consulting them on their opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sure they probably didn't know what to say at first. You know, I don't know how they would, what was going through their head, but yeah, I absolutely leaned on them. Leaned on my parents. You know, I knew deep down that I thought, at least deep down, that if I had an opportunity, that I think I still had a chance to make it, right? And I mean, like, you know, a legit opportunity, and I was getting some ABs and getting some time, I think I had a chance. At 25, at middle of the year, at waiting for spring training, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into that, and it makes it really tough. And the lifestyle's tough, and, you know, all those things come into play. I think they both wanted me to be happy, right? I think my parents wanted me to be happy. Like I said, I was struggling a little bit, just emotionally going through all those things, you know, without being able to play, not even being on the field to try to even make a difference. But, you know, I think they both believed in me as well. I think they had seen like the adjustments and the changes that I had made. And I think, you know, maybe we need to ask them if they thought I actually had it in me or not, but, they were extremely supportive. You know, like I said, I think it comes down to, they wanted me to be happy. You know, I think, what my parents are really good at, and my dad's kind of famous for saying, you know, he's more proud of the guys that we are rather than the baseball players. And I think my brothers kind of felt the same way, that they wanted to, you know, they wanted me to be happy, and they kind of knew that it didn't necessarily matter if I was playing baseball or what I was doing, that, you know, that I would be successful. So
if you could go back and talk to your 21-year-old self, like right after draft day, about life in the minor leagues, give advice, whatever it may be, what would that pep talk look like?
That's a good question. I don't think I really would have done much different, man. You know, to be honest, I think I worked my tail off. I think I grinded. I think you know, maybe I not necessarily went down a wrong path, but what I tried to accomplish early on in my career versus what I tried to accomplish later on in my career and what actually kind of clicked. Obviously, I would have told myself to do those things earlier, but you know, to be honest, I don't have any regrets. I don't think I would have done anything different. Even looking back, I think at the time I did exactly what I wanted to do. You know, I worked my tail off. I tried to be a good person. I tried to be a good teammate. You know, to me, that's all I can control. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily have changed anything.
And how has your career, your playing experience impacted how you're able to communicate with players about what you do with Blast? Like, kind of what's your long-term goal there, and how has your playing experience helped you beyond your playing career?
Yeah, I think for the most part, it gives me some validity to what I say. You know, I think it doesn't sound like BS if it comes from me a little bit, you know, and knowing my pedigree, knowing my family, and knowing, you know, my experiences from playing, I think, you know what, and to be honest, I think a lot of it comes from the fact that I struggled multiple times in my career. I struggled at many stages of my career too, you know, being in high school when I got hurt, being in college, going through the sophomore year, doing those things. And then in pro ball, I think I learned a lot, and I learned a lot of, you know, how to face adversity and how to kind of work hard and fight through those things and stay focused and driven and passionate. And, you know, to me, that means a lot to me. You know, I think that's kind of what's been beneficial when I relay some information to organizations, when I talk to them, or players, when I talk to them, or I go in on a lot of conversations with colleges and bigger programs and bigger deals with Blast. I think that experience and the knowledge that I've gained from playing, and the knowledge and experience that I've gained from working with Blast, I think the combination of those two, you know, make it extremely beneficial to kind of give some feedback and help people. And that's what I like to do. I like to help people, and I like to help people get better. I like to help people learn. I like to help people understand. So, you know, I like to see where it goes. I just want to try to get as much experience and soak up as much knowledge and maybe some connections and stuff along the way too. And kind of see where it goes.
I got a little rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Okay, let's do it.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
In the Texas League, the Frisco Rough Rider.
Oh, met my wife at that ballpark.
There you go. Shout out wife.
Least favorite, or first date, but didn't meet there, but it was first date. Least favorite minor league ballpark.
Unfortunately, probably Clinton.
I think Clinton is probably the leader in the clubhouse, yeah, in that category on this podcast. Best pitcher you ever faced?
Alex Reyes, Cardinals.
Throws gas. Yeah. Favorite home run you've ever hit?
I was the last home run, regular season home run in Bakersfield Blaze history.
That is awesome. You're a footnote, man.
I was also, unfortunately, the last regular season losing pitcher in Bakersfield Blaze history too. So there's a little fun fact for you.
I mean, that's a lot of fun though. that's going to last forever.
There you go.
Okay. I got some Seager Brothers related rapid fire. Who's the most competitive? At anything, I'm talking checkers, board games, whatever.
You're probably talking to him. Probably me.
Who's the strongest?
Not to toot my own horn, but probably me as well. Actually, I guess it depends on what you ask. If we're talking like lower body, Kyle's got some tree trunks. He's pretty strong in the bottom half.
Well, he's got dad strength.
It's true.
Who of you and Corey, who's the more fun uncle?
Ooh, depends on which kid you're talking to. Corey's super close with the girls. He loves hanging with the girls, and me and crew got a really good bond. So I guess it depends on which one of them you talk to.
You guys go out to dinner. Who has to pick up the check?
Oh, we met Kyle for sure. He's the older brother, you know, all that good stuff.
Who picked on Corey more? You or Kyle?
Absolutely me. But Kyle, Kyle was the king of egging us both on. That's for sure.
Okay. This one is just, I ask this to everyone. What's you got a nightmare bus ride story from the minors?
Yeah, I got a couple good ones.
You can let them all fly.
Yeah, we, So I was the king of couldn't sleep on the bus, like still the king of that. Like I can't sleep on plane, can't sleep on bus. The only way I could.
That's a tough life.
Oh man, talk about a bad combination. But the only way that I could is if I was able to lay down on the ground, which you're on a bus full of minor league players, it's pretty gross, right? I would lay down on a bus, used to get stomped on all the time. People would try to crawl over you and slip and fall and just smoke you mid-sleep. Like, it was awful, right? We had a, I can't remember exactly how long it was. It was in the teens of hours. I want to say like 13-hour trip. And that's probably a little excessive. That's kind of the...
Was that a Texas League trip?
That was Everett to Boise in short season. It's probably a little bit of like, you know, the how big the fish you caught was kind of a story a little bit. But we had a, I want to say it was like 13-hour bus trip. We had a long game before, you know, minor league games are slow, right? So we had a long game before Everett, drive after the game, 13 hours, get in the morning in Boise, Idaho, right? So that's not necessarily the greatest hopping, exciting town to be in either. But get in there. And then we turn around, I get like 2 hours of sleep in the hotel because I barely slept on the bus and I had to get back up and go to the field. So that's always the best bus stories. Then on the other flat, on the flip side, we had in Texas, when I was in the Texas League in, or when I was in Arkansas, but in the Texas League, when you get to Double A, they start treating you a whole lot better. And we had two buses for the whole team, which was nice. You got to spread out a little bit. We had the back four rows pretty much locked down for like our little gaming center. And we had, you know, plugs and TVs set up and we had the PlayStation going and we would do FIFA tournaments and MLB The Show tournaments and stuff all in the background and having a great time. That was kind of on the flip side. That was the fun stuff.
I feel like technology has improved. Like look at like minor leaguers 20 years ago or so. I feel like there's probably a lot of envy at all the assets that the guys now their fingertips or the traveling gaming systems or even like having laptops to play movies. Like I remember that was big when I was in school. But Justin Seeger, that is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining for Phenom the Farm.
That was a pleasure, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. That's it for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm. Huge thanks to Justin Seeger for stopping by, telling us about his journey. Go check out what he's doing over at Blast Motion. Really cool stuff. If you enjoyed the show, remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review. From Phenom to the Farm drops every 2 weeks on Tuesday, so we'll see you in a couple weeks. And make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com for all amateur baseball and prospect news. Always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. We'll catch you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.